Welcome to the second episode of ESG in the Arctic, the fall 2021 edition of the Breaking the Ice podcast. My name is Lisa.
And I'm Connor, and we are your co-hosts. We're continuing our discussion on the potential impacts of ESG investing in the Arctic. We'll be speaking with people from a variety of backgrounds to investigate the question, what kind of role, if any, will ESG have in encouraging or discouraging much-needed investment in Arctic infrastructure?
Today, we'll continue our conversation on the 2019 Arctic Corporate Shipping Pledge by speaking with one of the signees. Joining us is Lauren Smith, the Product Sustainability Manager at Columbia Sportswear.
Together, we'll discuss the reasons why Columbia signed the pledge, how it relates to Columbia's ESG goals, and some of their other initiatives. Now, let's get to the episode.
Welcome to the second episode of our short series on ESG investing in the Arctic. Today, we'll be speaking with Lauren Smith, the Product Sustainability Manager at Columbia Sportswear. Thank you so much for taking the time to meet and speak with us, Lauren. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I joined Columbia, about 2.5 years ago, August 2019, right before all of COVID started. So I joined a couple of years ago. Prior to that was in the automotive industry, but still working in sustainability, promoting more sustainable materials, as well as working in renewable energy procurement. And for me, it was a great opportunity. I was in Michigan before, not only to move to the West Coast and have life there, but also to make a transition into the apparel and footwear company, which has been a great industry to come into. And it's really been, for me at least, interesting to see how sustainability and environmental issues, they cross industries, right? Doesn't make a difference what industry you're in. The lessons and the learnings are, the same in many ways. And there's also opportunity for collaboration there too, across industries.
Your position as Product Sustainability Manager, what does it mean to be Product Sustainability Manager?
Right. So focus on a variety of areas. A lot of it, of course, focused in on our product and how might we get more sustainable materials, or what we call preferred attributes, into our products. And so those might be like more recycled content, for example, or organic content, those types of things, really trying to drive our footprint from our materials portfolio down. And so looking at opportunities there, but also doing a lot in the space to grow our circularity program, as well as looking at the reporting side of things. We particularly, I'd say in the last couple of years, there's been a great increase in requests, not only from our stakeholders and investors, but from our customers, retail groups, and consumers as well, wanting to know, what's in our products? What styles have preferred attributes? What are you doing as a company, for example, to reduce your greenhouse gas footprint? And so we're finding the rise in those types of questions has really spurred a greater need for more reporting in the environmental and social governance space. So working to put out our annual corporate responsibility report is a big portion of the role, as well as a whole host of other things that we'll dig into more throughout the podcast.
Great. Thank you so much. So going off of the environmental aspect of ESG, in 2019, Columbia signed Ocean Conservancy's Arctic Corporate Shipping Pledge. So would you be able to tell us a little bit about the reasons why Columbia signed this pledge?
Sure. Well, at Columbia, we really strive to connect active people with their passions by providing them with the products, the sleeping bags, the jackets, the shoes that they need to really seek inspiration and adventure. So to us at Columbia, the outdoors really provides that endless inspiration and adventure, particularly in unique places like the Arctic. That's one reason why, when presented with the pledge, we wanted to be engaged with it. We also, in terms of conducting our business, we really believe that we have to conduct it responsibly by managing our impact on the environment. So the pledge was another opportunity to do so, and really aligns well with our sustaining places where we live, work, and play, and living up to our four main pillars of that, which are, climate management, preferred materials, sustainable manufacturing, and chemical management.
So in that scientific research in protecting those environmental factors, do you have any, was there any factor that stood out more to you than another? For example, was it greenhouse gas emissions, preventing heavy oil spills? What was the driving factor behind the decision?
It was based on the factors I just mentioned, but when we were presented with the opportunity, we did go out and do a bit of research, wanted to better understand what types of shipping routes are going through the Arctic, what are some of the impacts that there might be on increased shipping through that region. And so after doing a bit of research there, like I said before, the outdoors, right, it's our ultimate playground, and kind of for us, like almost like our ultimate product. It's where our customers go to explore and be engaged. And so for us, it made sense. We want to protect these types of places, and this pledge was a great way to do that and to partner with other organizations to forward the mission.
In terms of sort of the background of the pledge, did Columbia conduct any sort of specific scientific research that led to the decision to sign the pledge, or was it sort of based on more of the factors that you just mentioned?
Yeah, I think all those reasons you just mentioned are important. I think particularly the recognition that if we don't take a stand now and protect those unique regions from things like, potential oil spills, for example, then, if there's any sort of waiting, then those regions aren't there to continue to try to protect. So we really just wanted to jump in now. Everything we see from, of course, those iconic pictures of your polar bears and penguins and all of that, you want to protect that, but more so you want to look at the, I think, environment as a whole, and not only in the Arctic region, but in other regions where we have that opportunity, where we may operate from a business standpoint. We want to make an impact for the better to reduce our, our overall impact on resources, as well as, like you said, greenhouse gas emissions. So we're working towards that in other areas of our work as well.
For sure. So we were chatting about this before the podcast, but just for audience clarity, so to what extent was Columbia using Arctic shipping routes before signing the pledge?
Yeah, I was talking with our folks in shipping, and we've not shipped anything through the Arctic. So for us, by signing the pledge, it wasn't directly impacted, but of course we don't want anything intentionally shipped through the Arctic that might be related. So for us, it made sense for us to do, mostly, like I said, because we want to make sure that we're protecting those places where we want our customers to enjoy.
In a similar thread, although again, this might be a little bit sort of not under your purview, we know that, approximately 3% of global emissions come from the global major shipping routes. Most of them are like Suez Canal, Panama Canals. This might also be a question for the shipping people, but I'm just wondering, do you know if Columbia has taken any measures to reduce its CO2 emissions in these routes?
So we are in the process right now of narrowing in on targets related to climate. And so logistics is an area that we are right now gathering our data and looking at, for example, like our shipping routes and other things in transportations and logistics to formulate a climate target in the future here. So more to come on that. I'll leave you in a bit of suspense there. We can't quite share quite yet, but we are looking into that as part of our overall climate strategy to reduce our emissions. Thus far, what was it? Just last year in 2020, we released our first target, which is focused on manufacturing. So our target there is to reduce 30% of our emissions from manufacturing by 2030. And so we are working very closely with our manufacturing partners to reduce emissions in that space. So that's the first one that we have released. And then we're also, in addition to focusing, like I said, on transportation and logistics, we are also looking at our owned and operated facilities. So, how might we reduce our emissions there? Maybe it's, say, renewable energy, for example. Let's look at our global footprint and figure out what makes sense in all of the different regions. And then we're also looking at that other portion of the pie there of our emissions. It's about 42% of our emissions are attributed to our material portfolio. So looking at our material portfolio to determine how can we reduce our impact there as well, whether it's, you know, focusing in on our top materials within our portfolio and implementing more, say like recycled materials in there to bring down that footprint, or what might be the best for the business. So it is on the horizon.
So I'm just wondering, like, on the horizon, do you have a timeline then of when you expect to be releasing those new targets?
You know, I would say as soon as possible. I'd keep your eyes peeled, you know, in the future, maybe, you know, next year, the year after. We don't have our exact timeline mapped out yet, but it's going through, you know, review cycles right now.
Okay. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how those targets are developed. So you mentioned for the manufacturing that it was going to be a 30% reduction by 2030. So I'm just wondering, how did you come up with those two numbers and dates?
Right. Okay. So we have worked very closely with our manufacturing partners to get a sense of what, you know, snapshot in time, what are our emissions now? And so to do that, we've been using industry tools. One is called the Hague Facility Environmental Module, and that is managed by one of the industry groups, the Sustainable Apparel Coalition. And so through this tool, it's been a great help for us, is to look at all of the data that our partners submit. So it'll encompass things like energy usage, water usage, you know, waste, those sorts of areas, and figure out which suppliers fall into different categories. And from there, working very closely with them to determine, you know, what are plans to reduce your emissions over the next, well, what do we know, 9 years to 2030. And so we chose 2030 to align with science-based targets. And so that's the date for science-based targets. So we wanted to make sure that our timeline aligned there.
So in these manufacturing greenhouse gas reductions, what are some of the principal ways that you're going to be going about that? Is it, you know, changing? Is it changing the energy sources? Is it, you know, I'm just wondering what exactly is going to be going into reducing it by that 30%.
Yeah, you know, there are a number of things. One would be looking at the energy profile of different facilities and figuring out, can some of them use renewable energy, for example, to help bring down some of those emissions. We are also collaborating with a number of our different partners through a project. It's called the Carbon Leadership Project. And so that one is really focusing on renewable energy and phase out of coal. And so the pilot just started, what was it, last year? Yeah, 2020. We started our partnership and our project with 5 strategic partners in Asia, a couple in China, India, and Vietnam. And so that project is coming along, and we'll be able to start to gather data from that at the end of this year and benchmark, you know, the progress that has been made there. So that's an example of what we're doing with our various partners.
I'm wondering, you know, as the scientific landscape sort of shifts a little bit, we can start seeing the effects of climate change over the next decade more and more. I'm wondering if there's any possibility that 30% might be bumped up even higher.
There's always potential, right? As we look at our targets and see how quickly we might be progressing to that. So there's always a possibility, right? I was just saying, but right now, yeah, we're sticking to that 30 by 30.
In terms of ESG, we've been finding that there are sometimes circumstances in which the environmental issues, so that would be the E of ESG, can sometimes come into conflict with the social issues, or the S of ESG. Does Columbia have any processes in place to navigate this balance?
You know, we're really focused on both the E and the S of ESG. We haven't shifted more towards, say, the social side or the environmental side. But a new development for us this year, which is pretty exciting, is that we are in the process of forming an ESG committee across our business. And so this is really to take a holistic approach to looking at ESG integration across all the different organizations. You know, we have a lot of great work going on across the business. This just gives us the opportunity and really the platform, I think, to really further focus that work and bring it together and make that connection for all the different organizations to say, this is how everybody, you know, plays a role in ESG. And so to do that, we are able to focus more, like I mentioned before, on enhancing our reporting capabilities, enhancing product sustainability through the use of preferred materials, and also building out our more formalized ESG strategy as a whole.
Great. Okay. And in terms of the social aspect, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement in the US and with Canada's treatment of its Indigenous peoples, you know, coming to the forefront, how has Colombia's way of looking at these sort of social aspects of ESG evolved in specifically in recent years?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. You know, for Colombia, we responded to those recent events by doubling down on our values of diversity, equity, and inclusion, not as just a human resource initiative, but we really saw this as an aspect that of implementation throughout our entire business, right? So that gave us the opportunity to go and to establish what we're calling our senior DEI leadership team to lead our company's efforts. And this has the full support of all of our brands, so in our executive leadership. I guess that's a good thing to mention is that we are a family of brands. So we're Columbia, Mountain Hardware, Sorrel, and Prana. And so all of the recent events have led to the establishment of not only this DEI leadership team, but also all of our divisions are conducting trainings in the space, as well as dedicated trainings for our senior leadership team. So we make sure that our DEI pillars are really driven from the top, but also to, I'd say, even more so sharpen our focus on DEI. We've created DEI subcommittees across the businesses to make sure organizations all have a voice that's heard. So we have this bottom up and this top down approach that's making sure that our efforts are being driven from all aspects of the business. And the committees are really focusing to start on topics that are important to their individual teams. And then there's a collaboration amongst those DEI subgroups, as well as our employee resource groups to then scale those efforts up across the whole organization.
I guess shifting focus now back to the Arctic, has Colombia taken any measures other than sort of this pledge to aid in the protection of Arctic ecosystems or in the economic development of its communities?
Yeah, in terms of the Arctic specifically, the Arctic Pledge is our first, is the one that we've most recently joined onto. But in terms of our commitment to climate and you know, climate advocacy, we have partnered with other brands across the industry for different initiatives. One would be, for example, last year we partnered with, I think it was about 13 other brands to publish an op-ed in Outside Magazine. And this was really dedicated to support the passage of the Great American Outdoors Act. So that was a bill that was allocating, I think, billions of dollars to support more outdoor recreation in the U.S. And so that's core to our being as Columbia Sportswear. So that's just another initiative that we have signed on to in the last year to support more environmental benefit.
So, you know, looking at Arctic communities nowadays, they have a huge infrastructure and economic potential, but they also need, you know, a safe and clean environment. So financial institutions, they do have a very important role in building this critical infrastructure because there's a huge infrastructure deficit now. That could include, you know, maritime opportunities for local shipping, not transarctic shipping, or other economic opportunities. So one thing that we're thinking about is how do we make sure that statements about banning transarctic shipment don't detract or put a bad image on for financial institutions to make those other kinds of needed investments in the Arctic?
That's a good question, actually. I would say probably for me, one that, you know, in my role, we haven't focused on too much. But I think that in any space, if you're going to focus, for example, you said on trans shipments through the Arctic, really looking across those organizations and seeing where that opportunity might be for collaboration to figure out how might our objectives align. You know, if there's more financial support needed in some area, then I'm a big believer in collaboration. So I think talking to others and making sure that those goals are well laid out and communicated could really open up doors for new opportunities across different industries and different organizations.
Thank you. So that actually brings us to the end of our prepared questions, but I'd like to ask you if there's anything you'd like to add to this interview that we haven't talked about so far.
We talked a little bit about our sustainable manufacturing and our manufacturing commitment. I think before we started the podcast here, we were talking a little bit about preferred materials. That was something that, you know, we just take a second and talk about there. I think it's an interesting area and one that for us at least has been of growing interest, particularly across our retailer base. We are getting a great number of requests in from our retailers asking, you know, what types of styles have preferred attributes or what types of materials are being used. And so for us, that has really shifted, brought more focus, not only, like I said, from a reporting standpoint on how might we be able to better communicate all of this, but also trying to figure out how do we get more preferred materials into our different products. So for us right now, we've taken a focus on things like responsible down. So we're 100% responsible down standard certified. We're also looking at leather. Leather is another area of significant emissions. So we have just signed on and we're now a leather working group member, which is exciting for us. So we'll be kicking off, more work in the coming year on that front. And also we've been looking at packaging, getting more recycled content into our shipping boxes, our shoe boxes. Those contain about 50% recycled material in our shoebox tissue right now, and about 90% recycled material in our shipping boxes, in our shoeboxes. And so that also provides us a great opportunity because, as you can imagine, especially now in a digital age, there's a lot of material that is shipped around. So we want to make sure that we are looking for sustainable and responsible ways to package our product to our customers.
So you mentioned the leather working group. I'm just curious to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So the leather working group really narrows in and looks at the environmental impacts of leather processing and manufacturing. And so as a member of this, we will be working with even more partners. I would say right now about 95% of our leather manufacturing partners are leather working group rated, which is great. And so looking to increase that number, and the practices forwarded by this initiative are really, best practices for chemicals, for management of, say, water usage and energy, and just a whole host of environmental impacts that come through the leather and tanning industry. So for us, we have Columbia and Sorel, our footwear brands. So leather is an important material there, and want to make sure that we are using responsibly sourced leather and are, looking to reduce our impact there wherever we might be able to.
A question that just came to mind too is, just based on my own research, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like most of Columbia's products are manufactured in China and Vietnam primarily. In China and Vietnam, I think most of the power sources are from coal or oil power. So I'm wondering how Columbia is navigating that. How is there a way of moving away from coal and oil power in those countries where most of Columbia's products are being manufactured? How is Columbia engaging in those conversations? Sorry, it's a bit of a general question, but it just came to mind.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. For us, the grid mix, right, varies from country to country. So working with our various suppliers there and figuring out what is appropriate for not only them as, you know, an individual manufacturing partner, and what the resources might be in the area, whether it's, you know, access to wind or solar, or what the contracting structures might look like, or if there are, you know, more renewables on the grid, say there might be transmission factors, getting it from, you know, a renewable energy source and getting it over to those facilities. These are all different considerations to be made. Of course, like you said, they do vary country to country, region by region. And so that's one reason why we've engaged, for example, in the Carbon Leadership Project, to start to focus in with a couple of targeted pilot facilities and then grow the program out from there. Our sustainable manufacturing team is also working very closely with all of our manufacturing partners to start to figure out which opportunities are available in those regions. And we're also working with some other brands to find those various opportunities too. Excuse me, because we're not always, not even often, we're not the only ones that are producing in a certain facility, our manufacturing partners. So what we find is that by banding together and collaborating with other brands, as well as our manufacturing partners, we're able to make a much bigger impact together if we're aligning our goals.
Okay, great. Lauren, do you want to add a final word, then we'll wrap up the podcast?
Sounds good. I just would say thank you again for this opportunity. We are more than happy to share what we're working on. And in terms of the Arctic Shipping Pledge, we are happy to be engaged on that front and are looking forward to what comes next.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate you being here today.
Great. Well, thank you both. It was nice to meet you both.
Thank you so much.